Hi, I'm Ros from World Have Your Say. This is a download from the BBC. If you'd like to read more information and our terms of use, take a look at bbcworldservice.com/podcasts. Here's today's show.
We've had the news from the BBC. Now it's our turn. Call us on country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello, I'm Robin Bresnahan, and there are three top stories moving today. Violence is escalating in both Bahrain and Libya. We'll hear the latest from both those countries and including some of the doctors caught up in that violence.
The whole hospital is suffocated. The patients are getting very, very sick. And we are off shortage of the ventilators and doctors. And we are really suffocated. There's black smoke all over the hospital and getting all over the six floors, the old and the new building.
We'll have lots more on that story later in the program. But first, there's still a lot of fear and uncertainty in Japan. Dennis on Facebook says that's where all eyes should be focused. IO2 says leave Libya and the Mideast to solve their problems. Japan needs our attention more. We're joined by Professor Richard Wickford, a nuclear scientist at University of Manchester here in the UK. And you can email him with your questions at worldhaveyoursay@bbc.com.
If you don't want to make an international call, text us on country code 4477 86 20 60 80 and put call me in your message.
Well, let's start the program by talking to Emu, who is in Miyagi Prefecture in Japan. And Emu, thanks very much for joining us again. You were on our earlier edition as well. For those listeners just joining us now, tell us where you are and where you were when the earthquake and tsunami hit.
I was on the road driving near in front of the ocean. I mean, Tendai Newport.
And what happened?
Then back and front, the big wave came to my car. So I was driving then, but I ran out of the car and I climbed the building, I mean, which is the restaurant place. Then some guy were on the roof of the building. Then they were yelling at me, like, climb here. So I climbed the building and, yeah, I saw big tsunami took my car, and my car is gone by the tsunami.
You must feel extraordinarily lucky to have survived.
Yes, I am.
Some of your friends haven't been so lucky. Tell me what's happened to them.
Some of my friends' home are gone by tsunami, and actually my grandmother is dead because of the tsunami.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Emu. How are you coping?
What does that mean?
How are you dealing with it?
I'm so sad, but I have to leave because I was lucky, so I have to leave now. Leave up now.
What about the rest of your family?
They are fine, and they are with me now at my home.
And what are your conditions like? Are you having enough food? Do you have electricity?
We have electricity here, but no water, no gases, and we have little food and water, but not enough to live longer.
How will you get more food and water?
I don't know. Like, in Japan, like, people live in other prefecture are sending some food for us, but I'm not sure about the future. Like, I can't see exactly my future. Like, I'm worrying about if I can eat tomorrow. So we are all worrying.
What kinds of things do you have left in your cupboards to eat?
What do I have now for eat?
Yeah, what are you surviving on?
We have some rice at my house, but if we eat them up, like, I don't know about the future. We have little rice, but I don't know.
It's really worrying. Emu, yes. What information are you getting, if any at all, from the authorities?
What does that mean?
Are you getting any information from the police or from officials in the town? Are they telling you anything?
Not really. Like, I watch TV, but not really enough information. Like, we need more gasolines to drive our car again, but, like, no gas station is open now.
What's your worst fear, Emu?
Worst fear. What does that mean?
What are you most scared of?
The big earthquake again, and I don't know. I'm afraid of the hunger for now.
Okay. Well, Emu, thank you very much for joining us, and we're really sorry to hear about your grandmother, and I'm sure that many listeners around the world send their condolences as well, and it was really good of you to talk to us at this upsetting time. And
thank you.
And if anybody else is listening from Japan and wants to share their story, as Emu does, you can get in touch by phone. It's country code 44 20 70 83 72 72, or you could send us a text at World Have Your Say at 44 77 86 20 60 80. Well, let's join Lewis now, who is in Sendai, Japan, quite close to where the epicenter of the earthquake was. Lewis, what's your situation?
Well, it's cold here. Food is limited. That's basically it so far. It's cold, and the food is limited. And aftershocks are still coming. There's aftershocks now.
It's happening right now.
It was a little aftershock right now.
What does it feel like?
Kind of feels like you're standing on a pier.
It's terrifying.
A little bit, yeah. And there's just fears of radiation, I guess. Aside from that, yeah, things are okay, I guess.
Lewis, can you describe what Sendai looks like now?
Compared to the worst-stricken areas in the coastal bits, it really doesn't look like much has happened, aside from buckled roads, cracked buildings, and things like that. Going through the city, you wouldn't think that an earthquake of this scale has happened there.
Lewis, I can hear in your voice, I mean, you sound really low, very understandably, and it is very early in the morning. You've been so kind to stay up for us. Have you lost all hope?
No, actually. I'm trying to stay as positive as I can. So I do sound pretty low right now. I just woke up, actually.
For us, I'm sure, which we are very, very grateful for. What do you want to hear from the authorities, or what help do you need?
For the time being, the help... Well, actually, for me, myself, I don't need as much help as the people in the worst-stricken areas. I'm seeking refuge right now with my girlfriend's family, and things are pretty... Well, things are compared to the things on the coast and things like that. It's much better.
And I heard you say, Lewis, that you were concerned about the nuclear radiation. Do you want to ask Professor Richard Wakeford, who's on the line right now from the Dalton Nuclear Institute in Manchester here in the UK, why don't you put a question to him? He's on the line as well. So you can say hi to each other. And Lewis, why don't you ask the professor a question?
Hello, Lewis.
Hi there. I was wondering what the effects on the environment would be like and how that would affect us now and if the situation were to get worse.
Well, I think at the moment it seems that there has been no major release of radioactivity from the reactors. And clearly, as you well know, the situation around Fukushima, is pretty bad after the earthquake and after the tsunami. So these guys in at the plant are battling in pretty difficult conditions. As time goes on after the earthquake, after the reactor shut down, the situation gets better because, as you probably know, they're trying to keep the fuel in the three reactors that were operational at the time of the earthquake cool. That becomes easier as time goes on. The authorities over there in Japan are taking the right action. They've moved the people most at risk, should there be a serious release of radiation away from the area, so the 20 kilometres. They've banned foods from the area, the consumption of foods from the area that might be contaminated, and they've issued to the people who might be affected these stable iodine tablets, just in case there's a release of radioactive iodine. So although the situation is an unhappy one at the plant, and these guys at the plant are fighting pretty heroically to keep things under control and contain the fuel, I think at the moment there hasn't been a serious release. And hopefully that will continue to be the case as the situation becomes easier. So I don't think, I'm not quite sure where you are. How far are you from the plant?
In Sendai itself, which is probably about 60 to 80 kilometers away, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're far removed. I mean, you're not going to see anything at this plant like you saw at the Chernobyl nuclear accident, for example, when a badly designed reactor and unauthorized operations blew a lot of the fuel right up into the air and spread it around. You're just not going to see that. I mean, they're fighting to keep things under control under very difficult conditions, but I'm sure you've got enough to worry about as the situation is with the earthquake and the tsunami without without additional worry. And I really don't think at the moment there's anything for you to be concerned about that far away from the reactors.
Okay. Well, Lewis, it's Robin here in the studio. I hope that helped answer your question. And I really thank you for joining us. And I hope your spirits improve and you get some good news somehow. I just want to bring in some of the latest news that's coming out of Japan. And the UK has advised British nationals in Tokyo and to the north of Tokyo to consider leaving the area, while the U.S. embassy in Tokyo recommends U.S. citizens living within 50 miles, that's about 80 kilometers, of Fukushima plant to evacuate or shelter inside. We've got three others right now on the line. We've got Karim, we've got Simon, and we've got Michael, all in Japan. And Simon, I know you're a Brit living in Japan. What do you think about those advisories? Does that worry you?
Well, it's obviously a concern for us here in central Tokyo to hear that news. But to be honest, as the professor just told us, we're way outside of the radius that could be affected by any potential nuclear meltdown. Actually, listening to the stories of your first guest, Emu, there, it makes everything, all the hype and fear here in Tokyo, pale into insignificance when we listen to stories like that. So for the time being, we're going to stay put here in Tokyo.
And Karim joining us from Osaka. What about you? Are you going to stay put in Osaka?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Lucky, I do agree with the fact that compared to the previous stories that we heard, I mean, our situation is just far, far better. So I don't really consider that we can compare at the minute. So, yeah, I'm going to stay put in Osaka for the time being, but I don't have any plan in the next couple of days to evacuate the country, for instance.
Okay. And Kareem, just remind us of your story, because you were in Tokyo when the quake happened, and then you moved on to Osaka. Why did you do that?
Yeah, effectively. Since my embassy, I mean the French government, advised us to go further south, at first place, I wasn't really taking that seriously, as I was really trusting what the Japanese official and government were telling us, but just for the peace of mind of my family in France, because, I mean, the French newspaper and all the media back in my home country are being extremely dramatic about the situation at the minute. So because they were starting panicking, and for their own peace of mind, and at the center, obviously, my own, I decided to go to Osaka for a couple of days just to relax them.
Okay. Well, we've also got on the line Professor Richard Wakeford, and thank you very much for answering Lewis's question earlier.
Sure.
It probably made him feel a little bit better. We've just got a line in here that the French government have claimed that Japanese engineers have lost control of the nuclear situation. Any thoughts? Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't have sufficient information to either agree or disagree with that. Without knowing the information upon which that assertion is based, it's very difficult to say. I just don't know what they mean when they say they've lost control of the situation. It's almost impossible to say from that. I mean, if they mean that they can't get water into the three reactors that were operational at the time of the earthquake anymore, I just don't know. It's pure speculation. I just can't comment,
okay,
because I don't know. I mean, up to now, it would seem that clearly they've had major difficulties, not being helped by these hydrogen explosions, clearly, which must have caused injury on site. It's difficult to think that it couldn't have done. Now, you know, actually trying to control the situation under those conditions, where you might have a major, obviously conventional explosion, not a nuclear explosion, going off. I mean, these guys, you know, are heroes, really. Really, a statement that says lost control of the situation without clarifying is not a particularly responsible thing to say, quite frankly.
Okay.
Because, you know, you just can't tell what it means,
right,
or what the implications might be.
Okay, well, we've got a couple other people on the lines that may still have some questions for you. Michael in Nagoya, Japan. Michael, first of all, just tell us your situation and your story.
Well, in central Japan, near a city called Nagoya. I was in my city hall on the fifth floor when the quake struck, and we basically got the tail end of it, so the building was like swaying and everybody was a bit worried, but basically no damage or anything like that. And the aftermath, like nearly a week later, and life is pretty normal. Like, people are just going to work and living, and obviously keeping up with the news.
But what concerns you most?
Concerns? Well, obviously the people who are in the stricken areas are really in trouble at the moment. There's a lack of food and gas, hygiene products, all sorts of things. They're not getting the supplies they need. And I think, as you read today, the people in the 20 to 30 kilometer zone, like just outside the evacuation zone, but still in the zone where they say stay in your house, they're not getting the supplies they need because people are worried about going in there, obviously.
I just wanted to bring in the professor one more time here, because we've just got an email from Tomoko from Fukushima City, who writes, "My situation is still better than others. I cannot shower due to lack of water, and it is impossible to get gasoline. But I am alive. The nuclear plants are very scary. If the wind direction changes, the radioactivity might reach Fukushima City. I heard places 30 minutes away from me are contaminated and that we should not touch any rainfall." What can you say to that, Professor Wakeford?
I don't know about that either. I can well imagine that the various types of radioactive material that are being released periodically from the reactors can be detected. That doesn't surprise me at all. You have very delicate instruments for the detection of ionizing radiation such as this, so you can detect extremely low levels. At the moment, or at least recently, these releases have been because they've been venting the pressure vessels to try and relieve the pressure and lower the temperature in the reactor vessels. What the recent releases have been is unclear at the moment. The situation is very confused. I was discussing the interpretation of a number of reports with other experts down in London yesterday, and it really was impossible to interpret some of these statements about, for example, fires in cooling ponds. It's very difficult to understand what that means. So, we're a bit in the dark at the moment from the information that we have. But what I think can be said is that as time goes on, the fuel in those three reactors that were operating at the time of the earthquake and which shut down automatically is naturally getting cooler as the heat decays away. Therefore, they are becoming in themselves easier to deal with. The problem is that the working conditions for those guys that are up at the face, dealing with all this, has become worse as a result of these hydrogen explosions.
Okay.
And what the results of that actually are is very difficult to say.
Absolutely. Well, Professor, thanks for clearing some of that up for us. It's very helpful indeed. Simon, we've got about a minute before we have to go to the news, but you're married to a Japanese woman, and a lot of people have been talking about the stoicism of the Japanese. Do you think that that is still holding up?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, there's a difference in opinion. Some people want to get out of here as quickly as they can. Now, my wife is a nurse, so she's really tied down to the hospital where she works. Dealing not directly with obviously the victims of the earthquake, but with her patients there. And I need to be here to support her as well. So for the time being, we're going to stay put. If things really, really get bad, then we'll find a way to get out of here and move south.
Okay. Well, I hope you do stay safe and really appreciate your comments and staying up very late for us there in Japan. Thanks very much to all our guests from Japan, Lewis, Emu, Karim, Simon, and Michael, and of course, Professor Wakeford. And if you want to get in touch, share your stories. Of course, this is going to be an ongoing story for the coming days. You can email us at worldhaveyoursay@bbc.com.
We've had the news from the BBC. Now it's our turn. Call us on country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello, I'm Robin Bresnahan, and we are talking about three countries on World Have Your Say today. We've been hearing the latest from Japan, but lots of you want to turn our attention to violence happening in Bahrain and to Libya, too. Well, John on Facebook says it's time to stop talking about Japan. They need our prayers, sure, but the situation in Bahrain is very bad. Ikra wonders how protesters in Bahrain can be called peaceful if they are carrying guns and weapons. But Muraguli says what's happening in the Arab world is greatly exaggerated. Maybe you agree. Well, you can join the conversation at worldhaveyoursay.com.
If you don't want to make an international call, text us on country code 4477 86 20 60 80 and put call me in your message.
Well, let's talk about Bahrain now. And there's been violence in the main square in the capital. At least six people are said to be dead. Troops have taken over a hospital treating the wounded, and officials have imposed a curfew and banned protests there. Now, at that hospital, doctors, and it's called the Salmania Medical Center in Bahrain, they've been trying to treat people injured when the security forces broke out. Now, I say trying, that was earlier this morning, but then they found themselves under siege. This is what three of the doctors told us earlier in the day.
Actually, from the morning, we are surrounded by police troops, the ambulances cannot get out to take the injured patients to Salmania Medical Complex, which is the biggest hospital in Bahrain. We cannot go out. Nobody can go in. And just now, we are in a bad situation. The troops entering Salmania Medical Complex yard. So we are afraid. We don't know what they will do for us.
They just don't allow them to go there. They don't allow them even to come inside. Even they prohibited the medical staff from getting inside. They are all around Salmania Medical Complex with their guns. And they are shooting anybody. Now in theater, we have three cases because they were outside at the door and they shoot them.
Right now, we are just few groups of medical staff. We are mix of Bahrainis and foreigners. We are mix of people who are Sunni and Shia. We are kept as hostages in the hospital. I have foreigners, Indian, Buddhist, Christian. I have every single person horrified with what they are looking. And the whole hospital is suffocated. The patients are getting very, very sick. And we are off shortage of the ventilators and doctors. And we are really suffocated. There's black smoke all over the hospital and getting all over the six floors, the old and the new building.
Well, the last voice there was Dr. Fatima, and we are trying to reach her right now. We spoke to her at the last edition of World Have Your Say that went out to the United States, and she has some pretty harrowing stories of still being trapped in that hospital. So we'll bring Dr. Fatima on as soon as we get her. But for now, let's go to Dalal. And Dalal, tell us where you are.
I'm in a village next to the Pearl Roundabout called Sanabes. And a while ago, we heard in loudspeakers in the mosque calling for God is great, God is great, Allahu Akbar. And we knew that something wrong is happening because we just heard that the police forces attacked the village next to us. And I think they are going to one village after the other because there's a curfew and nobody on the roads. So they are coming to our villages, to us.
Have you witnessed any of this violence yourself?
You mean right now?
Yes, or earlier in Pearl Square.
Yes, I was there in the morning and I witnessed everything that happened there. But before we go into details of what happened this morning, I just want to comment on the email, or I don't know, you just read.
Well, yes,
about us being armed and.
Well, I'm just going to read that to you because some of our listeners haven't heard that yet, and that is from Dr. Ahmad, who's emailed from Manama, who says, let me paint you a different picture of the so-called peaceful protesters. For over a month, the government and ordinary people in Bahrain have put up with these so-called protests that not only disrupt everyday life, but are considered treason in light of their demands to topple the government. These groups are not civilian groups. They are well-trained in warfare on all levels. Does that sound like the protesters you've been seeing, Dalal?
This has nothing to do with the people I've been with for the last 1 month. I've been there since 14th of February, and I spent all my day from early morning until even after midnight. I'm in the roundabout, and these people are so peaceful. I'm from a welfare family. I don't need to be out there on the street, but because I believe in what we are asking for, these are our rights. You know, the only weapon that we have there is the knife that we're cutting the oranges to distribute it to people. That's the only thing that we have. We have no weapons. I wish we have weapons so we could have defended ourselves today. Why do we get shot if we have weapons? This is a stupidity. This is a stupidity. And he should look at things with deeper thinking. This is very much a shallow analysis to what's happening in Bahrain. We have our rights. If we get our rights, even Dr. Ahmed, the one who sent this email without any consideration of the genocide that happened today, he would be benefited as well. They call us in the news, we are pro-democracy.
Okay, well, let's bring in, for another point of view, Bouashwa, who's also in Bahrain. What do you think about what you've just been hearing from Dalal?
First of all, let me thank you very much for putting me down on BBC. I was trying to get in touch for a long time. I'm coming down to the point of this sister of mine, Dalal. As she said that they are shouting up in the mosques, Allahu Akbar and Allahu Akbar. I really appreciate that. But I also want to ask a question, that when you kill innocent people and you shout Allahu Akbar, do you call that Islam? And now coming down to her other point, 14th Feb, She said that she's been there from 14th Feb and they don't have anything. They just have knives to cut oranges. Wow. If you just have knives to cut oranges, then how come there are people whose heads have been split open with the swords are available? How come these people are being attacked in their houses? How come people in the area of Naim, in the very close to the GCC roundabout, let me correct it, it's not a Pearl roundabout anymore, it is a GCC roundabout. How come the people from the GCC roundabout are going down to the houses of the people, putting them, dragging them down, and cutting them into pieces? How come the expats are being attacked? Who's attacking? Is it the government? No, it's not the government. These are civilized, so-called civilized protesters. Okay, she wishes to have weapons. Okay, how come you don't have weapons when you are shooting up a Saudi policeman or you call the army guy whom you blame as to be invaders? How come you're shooting up these people? How come the people are being shot?
Dalal?
Hello? Yes.
Yes, I'm still there and I'm listening to what he's saying. I think if you are living in Bahrain and you are living around the area, you would know that what's happening in the last 1 week, we were the one who was suffering most. The thugs that the government sent to us in civilian clothes, and they are the one who is beating everybody up. And the one you are saying that we have swords and we hit people's heads, did you see the heads that been exploded yesterday because of the army? Most of the injuries, not most, all of the injuries and the casualties are from the protester side. If you are talking about the policeman, which was Saudi, and he was shot because of the helicopter who was shooting randomly, and he was wearing a civilian's clothes. That's why he was shot by mistake. What are you talking about? Stop watching BTV and look at reality. What's happening here? Your own people. I don't know where you are from, but your own people, they are getting killed.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sister, I would like to reply you on this thing. The basic problem that you are facing, the division of your demands. The king, already for the past 1 month, he had already announced, come on the tables. The crown prince himself said, please come on the tables. Just before the army invasion, as you called it as an army invasion, came in, crown prince came on the TV. And he said, you know what? You want the power for